I'm Kat Woods, a Melbourne-based writer, movement and yoga instructor and blogger. I had the great fortune to interview yoga teacher Denise Payne, based in Ubud, Bali. She lives there with her young son Charlie, who's about to turn 14. I met her when I first went to Ubud about 3 years ago, and she is a rare and humble teacher. Denise lives and breathes yoga with such integrity. There's still so much to talk about, but I really hope that you discover something new about her if you already know her. And if you don't, I hope you really enjoy meeting her for the first time.
So, let me go and maybe this is all right, right?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay, great. Okay, so what did you ask me before?
Just where you are at the moment and what you're up to.
So right now I'm in Jakarta, and I'm in just near the end of a 200-hour teacher training that I do a couple times a year. It's a couple times a year here in Jakarta.
Okay. Is it still early days?
No, actually, Saturday is going to be the last day. So we're like neck deep.
How exciting.
Yeah, it's really fun. And it's always this is actually one of my favorite projects that I do, is the 200-hour trainings in Jakarta.
Look, I'll jump straight into the questions that that I emailed you yesterday. And anything that you don't want to answer, like I said, you absolutely don't have to. So
I'm okay with all of it.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so the first thing I wanted to ask is, you made the transition from a life running a yoga studio in America, which was one song, to living and working in Bali. Can you tell me when that was and what you remember about doing that?
Oh, absolutely. So actually, I had two studios. The big one that I had was called Yoga Boga. Mm. And One Song Yoga I had as a private studio that is also the name of my teacher training school. So Yoga Boga was actually the school that I had.
In Portland.
Yes, in Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many reasons why I moved to Bali. I mean, you know, there's like some pretty, one of the reasons was I really wanted my son to have a different experience growing up. When I was about six, which was how old my son was when we moved, that was when my dad started taking me traveling on his business trips. So I just kind of, there was something when he was six that I was feeling like I just want to go do stuff with him, you know, let him see more places. And so I was actually at the time considering moving back to Arizona, which is where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And no matter where I live in the world, I will always be a Phoenix girl.
Yeah.
But I had a really, just a heartbreaking experience with my son's father, and so that was really one of the main reasons I left Portland. Just in general, I just couldn't be there anymore, and so that was, so my first idea was to move to back to Arizona. And then I had a friend, that a very good friend of mine that had spent a lot of time in Bali, that said, he goes, you know what, you'd do great in Bali, babe. And so I went online and I looked up some of the schools, and then I made the decision to sell my studio. And then I was, from the time I made that decision to us moving, was about a 4-month period.
Wow.
Yeah, it was intense. I was in such a weird place. And I'd also gone through a lot in business-wise with Yoga Boga, because at the time in the state of Oregon, there was a lot of laws changing around yoga teachers, and where the state of Oregon wanted to make them file income taxes as employees. And so I actually was really quite adamant and passionate about teachers remaining as independent contractors and to keep that autonomy so that they could teach at different studios and do different projects and not just be employees and be able to handle their own, their own taxes every year as independent contractors. So there were a lot of teachers in a lot of trouble. They were having trouble filing. And so I actually took the state of Oregon to court.
Wow.
It was a Yoga Boga versus the state of Oregon.
Wow.
And I won that case.
Well done.
And it cost me a lot of money. It about bankrupted me. And I was really passionate about it. And I wanted to fight for the teachers.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I did it, but... And then I sound like a big baby right now, but I guess I just, no one ever really understood what I went through to fight for them.
No, it's exhausting. And I think when you really believe in something and you fight for it, it can feel like when you finally get a result at the end that maybe... Yeah, it wasn't worth sort of all the sleepless nights and...
Totally, and the money and the lawyers and, and when I won the case, I emailed all the studios and said, listen, this is what has happened.
Mm.
This is what I just did with the state of Oregon. This is the case we just won. And you now have all of your teachers have the right to file as independent contractors, and we changed the laws in the state. And no, people were like, what?
Yeah.
So it drove me crazy. So it was that coupled with a lot of things. And Portland wasn't really my town. It's cold and it's rainy and I'm from the desert and I like heat and sunshine. And I was just like, all right, just get me the fuck out of here. These are all the reasons I'm going to use to leave.
Yeah, I love it. Was it a difficult choice once you got to Bali, trying to find a home, trying to fit into a new community? What was that like, especially with a young son?
I did find the school online that I wanted my son to go to. And my friend told me, my friend that said that I would do great in Bali, he's the one that mentioned Ubud. And so I didn't know anything about it. I had never been there.
Wow.
And no, we just kind of showed up with six suitcases. I just, it was crazy. Crazy, Kat.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
No, it's exactly the sort of thing that I would do.
So it's interesting because when I was leaving Portland, I really do have a lot of friends there that are just, I'm so close to them. And people would say at my one of many going away parties, people would say, oh, you're so brave. You're so courageous to just get up and leave a country and go somewhere you've never been to.
Mm.
And I said, I'm not brave. I'm scared to stay here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it wasn't bravery that made me leave. I wasn't brave enough to stay.
I don't even know if it is bravery or not. I reckon it's just, and my recent experience was not being able to find a home. It took me forever. And a couple of people actually said, wow, you're really brave not knowing where you're going to go. And I went, it certainly wasn't a choice. I just, this is how things happen. And you roll with it and you do the best thing that you can. I don't know that it's,
For me, with making that choice to leave, it would have taken more courage for me to stay in that city than it did for me to leave, for sure. But I totally can relate to what you're saying, where it's sometimes stuff just happens. But this was a really clear decision for me of, I gotta go.
Yeah. And so
when we got to Ubud, I knew where my son was going to go to school. I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought I would take a year off and actually write my three books that I've been writing for an eternity. So I thought, oh, I'll just get there and I'll just write and I'll finish things. And then I became friends just via my son and her daughter, who became friends at the school. I became friends with the woman that owns the yoga barn. And a couple of other mothers at the school. Mm. And so the next thing I knew, Megan Poppenheim and I were having coffee at her house, and she said, you should teach at Yoga Barn. And I said, oh God, I've never taught at a yoga studio I didn't own. And, you know, I don't really know what I'm doing. But anyway, mm-hmm. she eventually convinced me. And then the next thing I knew, I was on the schedule at the Yoga Barn. It was really like, I didn't have a plan. It was, that kind of stuff was like, oh, well, I guess I'm teaching at the Yoga Barn.
But you know what? When I did your class, and I still remember it as if it was yesterday, your teaching was the most resonant I've ever had in my life. But you just looked right at home. You know, I still remember you walking in with, I think it was, you know, half a latte and you know, just walking around like, you know, this is my living room. And I just remember thinking, wow, this lady is cool. This is my teacher. This is the teacher I want to be. There's something very natural about you in that setting. So while I imagine that you couldn't have felt it at the time when you initially said, okay, I guess I'll feel my way in, there's no mistaking that this is the right place for you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, I just feel comfortable teaching really wherever I am.
Yeah.
So it's worked out. I've been there 7 years and I couldn't have asked for more than Yoga Barn, really. It's been an amazing, amazing journey.
So tell me about learning the Indonesian language, adjusting to the culture and the traditional ways of living there, and maybe what was easiest and hardest to get used to.
I would say, yeah, that's such a funny question. I would say that, yes, I did take Bahasa lessons. Mm-hmm. And my son eventually went to a different school, and he went to a bilingual school, so he learned how to read and write in Bahasa, mm-hmm. where I took language lessons. And I do pretty well. I speak better in Bali than I do in Jakarta. In Jakarta, they speak really fast, and in Bali, it's much slower. It's like going to the, like, you know, sleepy little village compared to being in the big city. So I do much better in Bali than I do in Jakarta. Mm-hmm. But I love it, I'm still learning. Like, I go on Google Translate and figure out, you know, a new word, and then I'm super excited about it, and I use it as much as I can. But as far as the culture is fascinating because there's so many layers to it. You see the ceremonies that happen all of the time, yeah. and yet you see, like, the, you know, kind of the other sides, like the trash and traffic and, you know, stuff that you just try to find you try to see the sameness on both sides of it. There's nothing really middle of the road in Bali, and it took me a while to really figure that out. Mm-hmm. It's quite an extreme situation, actually, as far as the culture goes.
It must have helped to already have a friend living there.
Well, he was kind of like came and went. He wasn't really mm-hmm. there when we moved there.
Okay.
I found a place on Craigslist mm-hmm. to live. And, you know, and stayed there for about 6 months until we got used to the place and drove around. And in 7 years, we've moved 12 times.
Wow. But, you know, I assume Ubud isn't that big. So even in moving, it wouldn't have been you know, hugely far, right?
No, it's not far. It's just, yeah, you just, I've noticed that people do move around a lot in Ubud and in Bali, just in general. They just move around. And I'm okay with moving. I like moving.
Yeah, so do I.
I love it. I get rid of a lot of stuff. Even if I only live in a place for 6 months and we're moving, I'm still getting rid of half of what I have. So I like it.
Yeah, I love it as well. It sort of forces you to downsize and to not attach to things because you know inevitably you'll end up having to lug it somewhere.
Yeah, for sure.
So my next question is, you recently had the opportunity to deliver workshops in Europe. So tell me about how that came about and what Italy and France, what the most memorable moments there were.
Yeah, it was such a great month. I spent a lot of time in Europe through my whole life. And then when my son was born, we didn't really get out of the country until we came here, and then it's mostly just Indonesia or Malaysia or Singapore. Mm-hmm. And I'd turned down gigs in Europe simply because I don't want to leave my son for too long. Mm-hmm. I can leave him for like a week at a time with friends here and there if I go to Jakarta or somewhere else to teach. But Europe was a big deal. It was a month. And mm-hmm. But I turned down gigs for a few years for a couple of reasons. One, I didn't want to leave him with friends for a month. Mm-hmm. And two, when he was younger, I didn't really want him with me for a month where he would be more dependent upon me. Mm-hmm. So now he'll be 14 in January. Mm-hmm. And it just happened, and he was at the right age. Mm-hmm. And the best part about it was taking my son to Europe for his very first time. And he loved it. We had such a good time. And the studios that I taught in Paris, and I taught in Genoa in Italy, it was just beautiful, really fun, dedicated yogis, and I appreciate showing up where people really want to do this, you know?
Absolutely. So, and I guess because my dream is to see you teaching in Melbourne, can you tell me what it would take? Like, what is the process? Does a studio approach you, or...?
Usually, people approach me. Here's something I'm not very good at, and that is promoting myself at all. Mm. Like, I can barely manage any social media at all. I'm not good at it. I don't like it. I'd rather talk about how great someone else is. Mm. And I just am not good at it. So usually, like, being a yoga studio owner before, I would get emails from teachers all the time saying, like, this is how amazing I am. Here's photos of me. You know, book me to do a workshop at your studio.
That sounds horrible.
Every now and again I did it, and I would just go, nah, it's not really. Like, fortunately, I'm friends with some great teachers, Max Strom and Paul Grilly, and so those guys came and taught at my school where I know them and I trust them with what their wisdom and infinite knowledge. But, you know, one-off teachers that I didn't know, it was usually a disaster. Mm. So I feel like I'm not that person. I can't email a studio just out of the blue and go, I'm really amazing. You should book me. I'm not good at it.
Mm.
So usually what happens is people contact me and say, please come, can you do a workshop?
Mm-hmm.
And then I say yes. I never say no.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'll always say yes. And I love traveling and teaching. And I love Melbourne. And
so,
I would be there. You
so
just tell me when
down,
and arrange it, and I'll be there, Kat.
Does it come down to the studio organizing accommodation and flights? Is that how it works?
Oh, it just depends on how the studio works. Some mm-hmm. studios will cover expenses. Some mm-hmm. of them don't. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't, unless, because I'm not, like, you know, I'm not like a big, I don't have a million followers on Instagram, so so I'm not the big celebrity name, but God damn, we get some work done, don't we, Kat?
Yeah, look, I've got to say, I mean, I get emails daily from, you know, John, who just happened to stumble across my Instagram account, and he'd really like to help me get 500,000 more followers.
Yeah, I get those guys, too.
Yeah, and I just think, if you stumbled across my account, I don't really want you touching it, and B, what would I do with 500,000 followers? I mean, if they're going to come over for dinner and they're going to hug me, and you know, they're going to be people who see me in my pajamas and don't think that I'm horrible, wonderful. But if they're 500,000 people, I don't know. I mean, I just don't really, you know, for business purposes, I can see that waving numbers around is great, but you know.
Yeah. I get those emails from those guys. I can get you 500,000 more followers. Mm. And I kind of go, well, I'm busy right now with these 40 people in my class. Yeah. I got to go.
That's exactly right.
I don't really
right.
have time.
Yeah, I think you've got to decide whether you want to put all your focus into an online persona or whether you want to live your life. And, you know, I do go through periods of going, oh, I've got a blog and I've got to update this and do that. And then I go, yeah, but all this time I'm sitting here behind a screen, I've, you know, I could be speaking to someone that I love. I, you know, uh-huh. maybe I'll get run over by a bus tomorrow. This won't matter.
Yeah. There's a woman in my training right now that said, she goes, you know, I found you on Instagram, but there's not much stuff on there. Like, you should post more stuff. And I said, I'm busy right now and with you in a teacher training. How on earth could I possibly be posting more stuff these last 2 weeks? I'm like, when I leave here at 5:30, I go home and I think about you and I think about what kind of feedback and what are we going to do the next day? I'm not out taking pictures so that I can post one. It's the last thing on my mind. You know, I try to get a few in, but I'm just kind of busy. Instagram's such a, it's all the social media is a real afterthought to me.
Yeah.
I love the people right in front of me, and I know what I'm really good at, and I know what I don't have energy for.
Yeah.
I know what I'm good at, and that's a step in the right direction.
Look, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, another thing I wanted to ask was, the essence of Waheguru, could you, because that was a term that I was introduced to by you, could you pronounce it properly, not like me, and also tell me what the essence of it is as you see it?
Waheguru means, translates to wonderful teacher. Mm-hmm. And it is, it's Punjabi, which is the language of the Sikh philosophy, which is how I grew up. I grew up living as a Sikh, mm-hmm. and I still kind of consider myself one, which is why I wear a white T-shirt every day, which maybe many people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, Waheguru is everything, and everything is Waheguru. It's everything is a wonderful teacher. Mm-hmm. Either the food I eat or the person I'm next to, or the class we just had, mm. or the people that show up. Everything is Waheguru. Mm.
And all the animals that you live with?
Well, we're down to one dog.
Oh! So, what happened to all the guinea pigs and rabbits?
Well, we didn't have rabbits. We had one guinea pig, and she lived to be over 5 years old, which is pretty good
for a guinea pig in
Bali.
Mm.
Yeah, she did great. And she was adopted by us anyway from a friend of ours who had had her for over 4 years, and then we had her for over a year.
Aww.
And we've had a bad streak of luck with pets in Bali. We've had dogs poisoned by the government. We've had cats get, you know, eaten by snakes. Mm. I mean, we've gone through it, but we still have our one dog that we've had for a few years.
And did he not have his own Instagram account, if I remember?
Did who?
Your
Maxine.
Dog. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, my son started an Instagram account for our dog Maxine. He doesn't do anything with it anymore. He forgot the password and then couldn't get into it. So we can't delete it nor can we update it.
Maxine is frozen in Instagram world.
It really is. Yeah. I had another dog that I started a Facebook page for, and Franklin, who was poisoned. Mm. And I've deleted it 10 different times off Facebook, and every now and again it'll say, Franklin the Adorable has 10 new followers. I'm like, how can this be possible?
That's,
so our dogs are
disturbing.
Just they're infinite. Yeah.
So the other thing I was going to ask is, I know that you run quite a lot of workshops, and you started the Art of Mudra hashtag on social media. Can you tell me about mudras and how they can be used in the yoga practice?
Yeah, for sure. So mudras were actually what my teacher started me on in the very beginning. There was no asana, just mudra and mantra. Mm-hmm. And so I've been practicing mudras since I was about 15. Mm-hmm. And I started the workshop or the training or workshops that I do called Art of Mudra.
Yes.
I started that about maybe almost 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so Art of Mudra was a workshop that I used to do in my studio in Portland that was one weekend a month for however many months. I think I did 3 months, and then we had a fourth month weekend that was just for women only.
Yeah.
And then, so now I just do like 3-hour workshops in Bali. And then I also do like full day practices on mudras and teacher trainings.
So do you incorporate them into your asana practice, or is it something that you do separately?
I think we do some mudras before the asana practice and then some afterward.
Mm-hmm.
And some people that do the training, mudra training with me, I will see them doing mudras in other asanas, which is fine. I don't tend to do that myself, but people tend to fall in love with mudras.
Mm.
And so they just start adding them in naturally on their own. I mean, Gyan mudra in some asanas is pretty common.
Mm.
Mm. I love mudras. I feel like they're, it's like a whole, it's a whole other type of asana practice. It's, you know, you're considering the posture and the energetics of it and the functional purpose and the benefits, just like you would an asana practice.
Well, could you describe to me a mudra that is resonating for you at the moment, and how someone listening could do that?
Well, most commonly used in a yoga class would be Gyan mudra, right? Mm-hmm. With a index finger and thumb touch, and then you have the other three fingers extended.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty common. There's so much information about Gyan mudra. One is that Vivekananda, if you've ever read anything by Vivekananda,
mm-hmm.
he says that Gyan mudra is a gesture of your intention for connection with divine consciousness.
Mm.
And he writes that it is simply a gesture of your intention, but it doesn't mean you have it, which I think is hilarious. Also, the three fingers that are extended in Gyan Mudra represent the three gunas of Raja, Tapas, and Sattva. The three characteristics, the three qualities that are in all living things. So those three fingers extended represent the three gunas. So it's important to have good posture, mm-hmm. when rather than like a slumped Gyan Mudra with very lazy, you would want to extend those fingers with space in between the fingers, just like you want some space in between those gunas.
That's so interesting. I've never heard that before. What poses, mudras, and intentions are you working with at the moment in your own practice?
Can you repeat that?
What poses, mudras, and intentions are you working with at present in your own practice?
Intentions? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. What poses? Well, I always do love inversions. I spend a great deal of time in headstand and always working on arm variations and leg variations. Mm-hmm. My intention for every pose that I do is that it feel the same as every other pose that I do. In my practice by myself on my mat, I don't go through like a full class like you would if you went to a class and mm-hmm. you do like a whole bunch of different things. I tend to spend an hour maybe on one or two things at a time, mm-hmm. so that I can develop mastery in each pose that I do, mm-hmm. and eventually each one feels the same as the next. And that is my intention, for to see equally and to feel equally in all shapes. So whether it's handstand or headstand or really anything, to find the same qualities.
That's beautiful. It's something I'm going to have to think about. Two more questions before I allow you to go back to your students. The white T-shirt. So could you explain just briefly what the significance of that is?
Yeah, so in Sikh philosophy, Sikhs wear white most of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are variations, and it's all good, but my teacher used to say to me always, Satraha, white is right, white is right. and I just wear a white T-shirt. People think it's goofy. I think they, not that I ever consider it, but a lot of people kind of joke about it, but when I explain that I actually have a Sikh background and live still as a Sikh, that is like my truest intention is the Sikh philosophy. And so, sometimes I put on a different shirt and then I always take it off and put on a white shirt if I'm teaching. But I do wear other things when I'm not teaching.
So is that, was that the influence of your father?
No, my teacher, Satjeevan Singh, not my father.
Were either of your parents interested in yoga or,
No.
No?
Hmm. No. Yeah. I grew up with an only child with a single father, mm-hmm. and that would be a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
If you're interested one day, I'd be more than happy to share it. And,
I would be very interested in talking about that. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. But he wasn't very, he didn't really participate a whole lot. Mm-hmm. So I was very grateful that I met my teacher. I actually met him when I was 8 years old, mm-hmm. and then started studying with him when I was 15.
That's fantastic. And that was that in Arizona?
Uh-huh. In Phoenix, yep.
Fantastic.
A little large Sikh population in Phoenix.
Oh, wow. As an Australian, I wouldn't have known that. And one more question before I allow you to go. What workshops,
sure.
classes, and travel are planned for the remainder of this year and looking into 2018?
Yeah, for sure. So, some cool stuff. I'm going to be doing a master series class every Thursday at Yoga Barn for the rest of this month, starting next week. And that is, Yoga Barn has asked me to just do it's a 3-hour class, and mm-hmm. they're considering it a master's series. Mm-hmm. And so that workshop I've titled it The Great Practice. And so I'm looking forward to that, although I have no idea what I'm going to do. And then starting November, because I've been busy here in a teacher training, so so then November 2nd, I have an advanced training starting in Bali for the month of November. Mm-hmm. And then I have, I'm developing some continuing education workshops for accredited hours with Yoga Alliance that mm-hmm. I'll be announcing for next year mm-hmm. because finally I have a new assistant that's going to help me with that. When it's just me, Kat, I really don't, I just can barely show up for class, much less get anything done. Mm-hmm. So I'm really fortunate that I have this new person. And then I've got, I do two trainings a year in Jakarta. I will be doing more weekend workshops here. Mm-hmm. And then I'm teaching again July and August in Europe again next summer.
Fantastic. At the same studios?
Yeah, and also in Milan. We'll add a couple studios in Milan.
I'm actually going to Italy for the first time ever next year.
Oh, it's going to do your head in, totally.
Ah, I keep getting told that I look Italian, so I figured I better go and make sure that they're all absolutely beautiful and fabulous. And then maybe I should just pack up my suitcases and do a bit of a Denise and Ubud style situation. I'll just rock up.
I highly recommend it.
Well, I'm doing, I'm actually going to Puglia, which I'm sure I've pronounced completely wrong, and Dubrovnik by ferry.
Wow.
Yeah, right.
That's
on the rocks.
That's going to be amazing.
Right on the ocean.
Beautiful. Mm. Beautiful. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
I know that I am going to come and study with you. I don't know where in the world, but I would be thrilled if we can get you to Melbourne. And if there are any studios that you are particularly interested in, anything that I can do to help make that happen, I will absolutely do.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm not attached to any studios there, so, you know, we'll talk about it and make something happen. I'd love it.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, and best of luck with the remainder of the teacher training, and I'm sure we're going to see a whole lot of fabulous teachers out in the world very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kat. It was a pleasure.
I'll speak to you soon.
You got it. Bye-bye.
Bye.